each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Surprise, it's not Father Anthony, it's Mike Stark. I am the producer of the Truth and Life audio Bible and also the upcoming a documentary on the life of Cardinal Francis George, sitting in on listener-supported Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ Chicago. My guest today is Kevin White. No, not the Chicago Bears wide receiver that was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago and hasn't seen the field in 3 years, but the president of the Catholic Citizens of Illinois, and I have the honor of coming to their event this Friday at the Union League Club, speaking to them, and I think it's important that people know not about that, but more importantly, what the Catholic Citizens of Illinois do to support Catholics all over the state of Illinois. So, welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of clarifications. I'm also not the former mayor of Boston. That was the one I used to get all the time before the Chicago Bears drafted Kevin White. And I'm the vice president, not the president.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. I know our president would want that clarification to be made. So Marianne Hackett is the president. I'm the current vice president.
Okay. Well, you're important and you're here. So
that's right.
To me, you're the only one on the other side
exactly.
of the desk here.
Exactly.
So we'll be talking.
Just have to make
Marianne
do.
Wants to come up here, she can.
That's right. That's right.
So first off, Kev, let's talk a little about who you are, what your background is, and what inspired you to get involved with the Catholic Citizens of Illinois?
Yeah, it was kind of a long journey. I was born and raised in Evanston, Illinois. Went to school locally there. Went to Knox College and then University of Wisconsin Law School. At the University of Wisconsin Law School, I got involved with the pro-life movement on campus. That was in Madison. Kind of an interesting experience. Began to understand more clearly that the pro-life movement is actually quite vibrant and quite powerful and not very well known. We got a lot of support on the campus, even though obviously we had a lot of opposition as well. After that, I went to work at Winston & Strawn, one of the major Chicago law firms. I was a litigating partner when I left there. And I left there to begin my own practice. I was a solo practitioner, started working there. And at that time, I'd already been involved with events with Catholic citizens, but as my own firm, I had a lot more discretion as to what kind of interest to pursue and how to market things, as it were. And so I got very involved with Catholic organizations generally, and particularly Catholic Citizens of Illinois. Catholic Citizens of Illinois was started by Marianne Hackett, our current president, and Tom Roser. And if any of your listeners knew Tom Roser, he was just a remarkable person. He was came out of Minnesota but settled eventually in Chicago and had just an incredible Rolodex of contacts in the political world and also was a devout and very much a practicing Catholic. And so between the two of them, they set up Catholic Citizens of Illinois in, I think it was 1997. I started attending their events. I started recruiting some speakers for them and eventually came on board as an officer and currently as the vice president.
Now, you mentioned the pro-life movement. Obviously, today is a special day for the pro-life movement, as we're going to be at least informed of who the president chooses as his next Supreme Court nominee. I'm rooting for the Chicago girl, the Catholic girl that has seven
the
kids.
Indiana girl, you mean.
Well, she's in Chicago now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she is.
But I'm rooting for her.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on what's going on there? And the fact that, now we're going to get a little political, but the fact that it doesn't matter, Trump could throw up Ruth Bader Ginsburg's twin sister, and the Democrats would vote against her.
Well, first of all, I think that's absolutely correct. There's so many ironies about the whole situation that the Democrats find themselves in right now, including the nuclear option, which they were responsible for.
Too bad.
Yeah, exactly. And of
thanks,
course,
Harry.
Yeah, and that, yeah. So it's just a wonderful irony. But it's amazing, and it's a great example of what I spoke about just a few minutes ago, my experience in Madison with Students for Life. The life movement is out there. It's out there all the time. Anybody, as I did with my family for many, many years, 20, 25 years, anyone who attends the March for Life is very conscious that the movement is out there. It's strong. It's young. Always young. It's constantly renewing itself and becoming stronger. So, I mean, it's so amazing to me that instead of a Hillary Clinton, we now have someone who's drawing from a list of potential nominees that was put together by the Federal Society and the Heritage Foundation, and has no qualms about doing it. Almost anybody, I think, I could probably say anybody on that list would be apparently pro-life. And I say pro-life, I would be very unhappy with a so-called litmus test. But I think as long as you have a nominee who is willing to follow the Constitution as it was written, or either as it was originally written or as it was later amended, and we always forget that there's many parts of the Constitution that are much more recent than the so-called founding fathers, as long as they enforce the law as the judiciary was supposed to do under our Constitution, the court will come out pro-life, in my view. The court will come out pro-life.
It should, but as has been said before, the Democrats want to paint it as though this Constitution was made 240 years ago by these white slave owners.
Right.
And it's a living and breathing.
Correct.
And it should be. They should be able to change it to the way they like it. And now they're talking about expanding the Supreme Court. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Elena Kagan had no judiciary experience, but was somebody that, you know, kind of got green-lighted without much fuss.
Yeah, there were several fairly recent appointments who had no judicial experience. You're referring, of course, to the argument against Barrett.
Right, who I like.
Yeah, right, and who has an extensive written record, and everybody pretty much knows how she would decide cases, so she's not an unknown in any sense at all. Wizard White was I don't think had any judicial experience. Kagan didn't have any experience. I know there are a couple of others because several articles have focused on that. So no, these are all straw man or straw person arguments that the other side always raises when they're not getting their way. And the wonderful thing is we have a very unconventional president that just kind of blows through this stuff in a common sense way. We may not like, I mean, I don't have a problem with it, but we may not like his Twitter style. We may not like his past personal life. I mean, there may be all kinds of things we don't like about him, but as our president, he seems to be able to cut through the clutter very effectively and just neutralize, as he did in the primaries. He's kind of neutralized the media on this stuff, and he's neutralized the other side. It's very difficult to oppose these nominees on the merits. They can only argue that. just an example of how much this president controls the agenda. There was a report a couple of days ago that Chuck Schumer got a phone call from the president to talk about potential nominees that Schumer might be willing to agree to, and he proposed that Garland be nominated.
I heard that.
And the argument was that this would somehow unify the country. Well, that's absurd. That's absurd. It would not unify the country because the Democrats are not, I should say, the other side is never interested in in unifying the country, unless the country is ready to get behind them.
Well, they're pushing further and further to the
right,
to the left. It's ridiculous.
So anyway, that was sort of the way I got into this. I also was very involved with the Thomas More Society for many years. I served on their board, and in that capacity got interested in some of these so-called contraceptive mandate cases under Obamacare. And I actually had two cases here in the Northern District of Illinois. One is still pending. The other is was very favorably decided on our behalf. And I've gotten very interested in those cases because I think what we saw in the contraceptive mandate context was attacks on free exercise. And we're going to see that across the board. I mean, to the extent that preaching Catholic doctrine from the pulpit is now, in some places in the world, like Canada, deemed hate speech, it's only a matter of time before that bleeds into the United States.
Well, Dianne Feinstein's already there.
Right, exactly. And you know, these people right now are on the periphery, and they don't have the power to do it. But what you're going to see is you're going to see, somewhat ironically, you're going to see the other side legislating at the state and local level and harassing the faithful that way. They won't be able to get away with it at the federal level, but they can do a lot of harassment at the state and local level, and they're doing it.
Unless I'm wrong, I believe Dick Durbin is a Catholic. I believe that Joe Biden's a Catholic. I think Sotomayor is also Catholic. There was no pushback on their Catholic faith when they were running for their positions.
Right.
Obviously, a couple elected, one appointed. John F. Kennedy got it back in 1960, but he was quick to squash that. I mean, his lifestyle, just like Franklin Roosevelt's, weren't the most reputable as far as a man or a married man, but yet they were effective, and these were two Democrats, but
right,
they'd be conservative today. But they are certainly were effective presidents in their times. And like you said about Trump, I mean, I'm not voting on his lifestyle. I'm voting on what makes a good person to run our country. And so far, it seems like he's done a pretty good job.
Well, he also had the advantage of an incredibly poor opponent, and the stars just kind of aligned in his favor. But I think since he's been in office, he's baffled his enemies and thrilled his
the winds
fans.
Have changed.
Yes.
To
I don't know where, you kind of wonder where this might go. I don't know if there's a candidate on the left who could kind of harness that same energy in the other direction. I mean, we can't rule that out. But he just has a unique ability to frame things in a way that resonate and make common sense. You know, going after this immigration stuff, the left can make up all the scare headlines in the world, but the bottom line is no one's going to buy open borders. And that's basically what the left has been left
keep them pushing it
to argue about, you know? They're talking about separating children from families and so forth. Well, every inmate in the country's been separated from his family,
yes,
or her family. He manages to get his opponents to say the most outrageous things, and that just increases his effectiveness. But anyway, to get back to the nominations, yeah, it's going to be he's in the category of master showman. He has somehow managed to keep. He either hasn't decided at all, which is my theory. He may know in his own mind, but he hasn't told anyone who could leak the news to the rest of the world. And I believe last time he had three or four of the nominees within geographic distance of the Oval Office so that he could literally wait to the last minute to tell anybody, you know, who to bring over.
Right.
And I suspect he's going to do the same thing. So I don't think we're going to even know. I don't think there's going to be anything in the news about this definitive until maybe an hour before the announcement, if then.
We'll see.
Just
we'll
amazing.
See. We've got to cut to a break right now. Again, I'm Mike Stark, the producer of the Truth and Life audio Bible and the upcoming special on the life of Cardinal George here on Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ Chicago.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s. This historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, two blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
All righty then, we're back. This again is Mike Stark, the producer of the Vatican-endorsed Truth and Life Catholic Audio Bible, as well as the upcoming Glorious Life presentation of Cardinal George's Glorious Life. Soon to be a saint, I hope. And I'm sitting in at Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. My guest is the Vice President of Catholic Citizens of Illinois, Kevin White. And we are talking about the political views of a Catholic, or two Catholics at this point. And I hope you agree with us. If you don't, feel free to turn it off. Where do you hear that on the radio? But hey, you know what? We're having a good time, and we are talking about the upcoming Supreme Court nomination President Trump is going to name later today, and we'll see where that goes. Kevin, more enlightenment on your thoughts on who you think might be the choice.
Yeah, I've followed it. I'm not obsessed with it, but I have followed the general coverage of the potential candidates Again, the president's been very coy about not even really settling on how many different people he's considering. Sometimes it's five, sometimes it's three, sometimes it's seven, and sometimes there's three women on the list, other times there's two women on the list, but you don't know which list he's talking about. So, and by the way, there's another candidate that's on the longer list, also from the Seventh Circuit, and that's Diane Sykes. And Diane Sykes got a couple of mentions early on. She would be an excellent candidate, has the judicial experience that arguably Barrett does not, but I haven't heard her name mentioned any time recently. But she's a superb judge. And when I say superb judge, you know, she's written some very good opinions on the contraceptive mandate and the legality of that and the right of people with conscience objections to that to opt out. But that's just, she's not making new law there. She's enforcing law already on the books. She's just a very good judge. And as I said earlier, in the discussion, if judges enforced the law as it was originally written and also, decided over the years, particularly in the category of, conscience cases, we wouldn't have a lot of these issues. In fact, if you look at the recent, wedding cake case that just came out. There's no new law there. There's no new law there. the opinion cites cases that have been on the books for 20 or 30 years, and all having to do with the right to exercise our religious beliefs. And by exercise, it's not to be taken to mean what the prior administration tried to make it mean, which is you're free to go to church and say and do anything you want within the four walls of your place of worship. Especially for Catholics, it means to go out and exercise your faith, as we're all mandated to do by Jesus himself. And I guess that in a way brings us full circle back to Catholic Citizens of Illinois, because I feel like that's really at the heart of what that organization is trying to do. It's to get in the public square. It's part of its kind of its founding purpose is to bring Catholic views to the public square. And that's really part of our mission in life as Catholics. It's not really a political issue. It's a evangelization issue. And the greatest threat right now to religious freedom in the courts is this definition of worship, which as I said, would confine us to the four corners of our places of worship and not tolerate anything outside of there in the way of bringing the rest of the world to our faith. So in my view, it's a lot more threatening and dangerous than we realize.
How so?
Because once you start doing that, as we've seen, once you outlaw certain kinds of thinking as somehow intolerant, or somehow, the phrase is politically incorrect, but it's really just painting everything as intolerant. The only virtue in the world anymore, to hear our opponents talk about it, is tolerance. And that means you can't have any views about anything that someone else might be offended by. And we're seeing this in regards to what's taught in the schools regarding gay marriage, what's taught, what the extent to which we can engage in business activities that consistent with our faith. It's across the gamut. And what the kids are being taught in the public schools, it's going to come up in that way. And whether parents have a right to opt out or shield their children from doctrines that are directly contrary to our Catholic faith.
Well, it's interesting that the gay marriage result was determined by a Catholic justice, Roberts, who was appointed by a Republican president, and some of these other justices that have been appointed by a Republican presidents have changed their opinion from the person that appointed them and thought they were going to run a certain way,
right?
A conservative way, and all of a sudden they come up with some liberal decisions. And
well,
that
actually,
hurts too.
Just a correction. You said it was Roberts. Roberts actually dissented in that.
Hard dissented.
It was Kennedy.
Kennedy, that's right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. Yeah. Kennedy.
In terms of what the danger is above and beyond these sort of hot button issues, if you read Kennedy's opinion, and I can't quote some of the gibberish that he recited in there, but if you read his opinion, you realize if this was a different topic and if the target of the ire of the plaintiff was a different group of citizens, not religious, but whatever. I mean, whatever other category you can think of. There's no reason that opinion couldn't be written to attack those people as well. I mean, and the other thing about the Kennedy opinion is it completely overrode direct voter referenda in several states, many states, 20 or 30 states, not wanting to redefine marriage. So it's very anti-democratic in every possible way. But again, these kinds of opinions could just as well have gone, some of them have gone very much against us, but things like the wedding cake case, these cases are still being decided 5-4, which means that literally one person on the court is deciding what the public policy is going to be for the entire country.
And they're saying Roberts is going to be the swing vote now. And again,
yeah, that may be. What they're trying to do, in my opinion on that, they're trying to infect him with Potomac fever. a lot of people thought that Kennedy, it got to the point where a couple of weeks ago, when the rumors were swirling again that Kennedy might resign, The New York Times literally begged him in an editorial, begged him not to resign. I mean, that's how politicized this all has gotten. And they criticized him in the editorial to some extent, but they also praised him for gay marriage and some of the abortion cases and so forth. So it's absolutely crazy that we're supposedly a democratic republic, and yet we're getting all these really important issues decided by literally one person, the swing vote.
Hopefully so, that'll change.
Yeah.
Trump's going to, let's assume, God willing, and I think God had something to do with this. I went to church on November 8th, 2016, and the place was packed like Christmas. I think a lot of people went to church that day. But if he's in for six more years, Ginsburg can't hold on for that long. I mean,
well, I have a theory about that. I have a theory, and it's nothing but a theory. It's sort of a probably a wish. My theory is that if Trump successfully gets in the next nominee, which I think is almost inevitable, people like Ginsburg and people perhaps even like Breyer or Sotomayor will realize that the only possible way they can get a like-minded successor is to live out spend another 6 years on the court. And they may decide that that's really not, as Kennedy did, that that's not really how they want to spend their last 10 years of their lives, you know. So,
well, Breyer, I don't know how old he is, but Sotomayor is pretty young.
She is young. They all have
and Catholic
health issues. Yes, well, we don't know their souls.
She went to Catholic school.
Yeah, I know. She's a wise Latina. I just don't know how many of the older members of the court really want to wait out a second Trump term, as you said. And of course, just health issues could take them away involuntarily, too. So it's quite an interesting situation.
Well, and there's no guarantee who's going to come after Trump if things keep, you know,
exactly.
Rocking along.
That's right.
It could be
That's true.
Pence, who's even more conservative. That would get Pryor on the court, you know?
Well, that is the humorous, that is the funny thing, you know, that everyone's saying, oh, God, don't impeach Trump because then we'll have Pence, and Pence is so much more presentable and
right.
He's equally conservative, maybe more. Well, I don't know what Trump is. I was going to say Pence is probably more conservative, but Trump is turning out to be pretty conservative compared to what we thought.
He's doing, I think, like you said, he's a straight shooter, and he's just facilitating the laws as they're laid out to him, not trying to create his own laws with his phone and his pen, as Obama said when he said elections have consequences. So we'll just have to see where it goes, but I think it's leaning in a good way, and there's going to be a fight, and we'll watch it. But we got these two kooky senators from the ends of our country, Maine and Alaska, that are, you know, the one lady reminds me of Mrs. Kravitz from Bewitched, Collins. She's got that voice.
You're dating yourself. But
I am.
I remember
nobody
Mrs.
else will date
Kravitz.
Me, so I'll date myself. But, you know, then you've got these red state Democrats that,
yep.
You know, need to. So anyway, you slice it, I think he's going to probably try and pick somebody a little middle of the road. But I would love to see him at least appoint one more, which would make it 6-3, and then maybe, like you said, then you'll just have Kagan, Sotomayor,
Breyer
that could deal with the fact that they're getting crushed in every decision. Knock on wood. So,
but again, it is scary because the tides can turn, and we can, as we have been often, we could be on the receiving end of this, and it's not healthy for the system to have courts overturning decisions that they just decided, you know, 10 years ago,
well, how about
5
this
years ago.
Harebrained idea to add more justices
well,
to make it more than 9.
Franklin Roosevelt tried that. And perhaps this is maybe they're intending the same thing. Perhaps when he did this, there was an uproar, and it was very strongly resisted. Some would say that that marked the beginning of the end of his popularity, although he obviously got reelected 4 times.
He got reelected because we were at war.
Exactly.
And they were all close calls.
But his legislative program and everything else started to decline sort of from that point forward. But, you know, the stitch in time that saved 9 is the expression that depicts what happened. And what happened at that time was the court suddenly became much more amenable to Roosevelt's previously unconstitutional programs. And so it's at least conceivable. I don't think it's going to happen again that way, but it's at least conceivable. First of all, there's no serious movement afoot that I'm aware of to expand the size of the court, but they may be starting up that talk to spook someone like Roberts into being more complacent or something. I don't know, but...
We've got a couple of Republican-appointed justices also that are getting up there in age, too. I mean, we've got
Roberts
is one of them.
Yeah.
And what if, you know, what if a Democrat's in charge when they decide to retire?
No.
I mean,
they're
older than Kagan and Sotomayor.
Well, and Roberts had a health scare a couple of years ago. I don't remember now what it was, but shortly after he was appointed, he had some kind of a medical emergency. And I don't, you know, Thomas... We hope is very healthy, but he doesn't. He looks about as healthy as Scalia did in terms of his weight and so forth. But I think he's pretty healthy, actually. I think he's worked out a lot and that kind of stuff.
Well, he eats a little bit less Italian food, but
yeah.
but it's all good. We gotta go to another break here. Again, I'm guest host Mike Stark, sitting in for Mary Fiorito on listener-supported Winds of Change. AM 750 WNDZ Chicago.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other. Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And we're back. This is Mike Stark sitting in. I am the producer of the Truth and Life audio Bible and the Cardinal George documentary that'll be coming up here this fall. Although I'll be speaking about that this Friday over at the Union League Club for the Catholic Citizens of Illinois. And this is Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Kevin White from the aforementioned Catholic Citizens of Illinois is here with me. And, Kev, let's get in a little bit more into what you do, what Catholic Citizens of Illinois does, what you were founded to do, and... where you see it going, and tell us about some of your events, including this Friday's event, where I will be attending and talking about the Cardinal George documentary.
Yeah, let me make a couple of points about Catholic Citizens, which always impressed me. Number one, there's no paid positions in the organization. Our board basically does everything. And the primary activities we engage in our monthly luncheons at the Union League Club. We've had a tremendously impressive list of speakers over the years, list of presentations. Then in addition to that, we produce a monthly hard copy newsletter that goes out to a pretty substantial mailing list. And we also have a very vibrant website, CatholicCitizens.org, and I would urge any listener interested in this organization to look at CatholicCitizens.org. What we have there is sort of an aggregation of articles. We have some of them under the category of Catholic views, some of them under the category of Catholic news, and it's sort of a great place to go just to kind of find out what's going on in the church, what some of the controversies are, and how to deal with them, contend with them, push back if necessary about them from an Orthodox Catholic point of view. We, the founders and certainly the current board, strongly believes that the Orthodox Catholic viewpoint is not well represented in the public space. We've become kind of a source for the media to get that kind of view when the opportunity arises. In fact, speaking of Cardinal George, I was very fortunate to have been available to talk about his passing at the time on WTTW, and that was purely as a result of my involvement with Catholic Citizens of Illinois. They had a theologian from Loyola, a priest, I'm not recalling where he was from. Both of them were very respectful of Cardinal George, but there was an undercurrent of what would I call it, not disrespect, but that he was somehow not progressive enough for their taste. And so it turned out that I was sort of the representative of those of us who greatly supported Cardinal George, despite occasional differences with him, greatly supported what he was, what he was capable of, what he did in the archdiocese in terms of founding orders and resurrecting moribund parishes like St. John Cantius, for example, or Our Lady of the Angels, just made a tremendous difference in this archdiocese. And I was privileged to talk to him about that. But that's a great example. We're often contacted to sort of as spokespeople for the more Orthodox Catholic point of view. So in addition to being a great source of news, much more efficient than trying to follow 10 or 20 or 30 different websites, we also are sort of the voice of Orthodox Catholicism in the Archdiocese. And as I said, in addition to that, we have this monthly luncheon meeting at the Union League Club.
Where's the Union League Club for people that don't know?
Jackson and Clark, I believe, downtown Chicago. I should know the intersection. I know it's on Jackson.
Union League Club. You can look it up.
Yeah.
Google it.
It's a wonderful venue.
And the event begins at what time? This Friday?
This Friday. Well, yeah, this one, it always starts at, technically it starts at 11:45 because we try to get our announcements out of the way. We have a very nice luncheon, very modestly priced, and then we have about an hour or so for our speaker and for a short Q&A after that. We've also been videoing our speakers lately, by the way, so anyone interested in kind of getting a feel for the kind of speakers we have, both at our annual banquet and at these luncheons, can look us up at Catholic Citizens TV, which is a station on YouTube.
So, well, I'll have to dress up then. I
absolutely,
can't come in
yes,
like I'm dressed
yes,
today in
yes.
golf shorts.
Well, either
and
that
shirt.
Or we'll just do a close-up headshot.
Photoshop. Well, tell us some of the previous speakers. I know you just had Bishop Hying, if I'm not mistaken. Or is he?
We did, yeah. And I think that one also by now has been posted. Well, let me speak briefly about some of our recent banquet speakers, because several years ago, when the Synod on the Family was getting underway and there was a lot of controversy about some of those issues, we had Cardinal Raymond Burke, which was just a hugely successful occasion. He's a very good friend of the organization. And then after that, we've also had Bishop Athanasius Schneider, who is one of Cardinal Burke's allies, if you will. I don't know that they actually plan this stuff, but they're very much of a like mind on many of the issues that are roiling the church right now. So those are, and then this year we're having Bishop Papraki from Springfield, who we all know from his time in Chicago, but also from his notoriety for basically, again, Catholic orthodoxy. I don't think he's controversial in the sense that he's off the reservation, as it were, but he is orthodox, and I think he believes very deeply in his faith and will defend it, which I think is very much what CatholicCitizens.org does. As far as the luncheon speakers, there's a list of them on our website. That's CatholicCitizens.org. But we've just had, I mean, you can kind of drop in randomly, and you always find good people. Thomas Levergood, who started the Lumen Christi organization, very successful down at the University of Chicago. Clark Forsythe, who has been fighting the good fight on pro-life issues at Americans United for Life, I believe it is. We had a speaker in when St. John Paul II's canonization was being discussed. Father Gnoisky, that's probably a name.
Gnoisky? Peter, yeah.
He's mispronouncing, he's here. I'm sure, right.
I know it, and I can't. Yeah. It's a lot of letters.
Monsignor Boland of the Catholic Charities gave a tremendous...
Michael Boland?
Yes, presentation. So we just, you almost, well, I don't think you can ever miss just coming to one of the luncheons. The second Friday of every month. It's at the Union League Club. 35 West Jackson, actually, I think is the address now that I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
But it's very prominent downtown. It is on Jackson, just off of State Street.
And it'll be this Friday.
Friday.
I have a treat for everybody. I'm going to be bringing a trailer on our Cardinal George documentary for everyone to view, so you'll be able to get a taste of it. We're going to have the seminary wants to have a big premiere night at USML up in Mundelein in the fall. We're going to wait till everyone gets back, but it is done. And so we're going to preview that for you. And who knows, maybe the Catholic Citizens would like to have an event where you show it.
Yes, I think we'd be very interested in doing that, yes, because... you know, the key to our organization is to stay fresh and to tap into audiences that we're not currently tapping into. So, we'd be very interested in doing something like that.
Well, anything about Cardinal George is good. I mean, he's such a good man, and he loved Chicago so much, and I know he loved what you're doing. And if you pray to him as I do every day, I guarantee you, he's talking to the right guy, and he can. Send some of his good graces your way.
Yeah, I knew him also. I'm a Knight of Malta as well, and he would often attend our events. I still remember a couple of things about him that were just remarkable. He had been in Rome. I can't remember exactly what the occasion was, but he had been in Rome. Oh, I know. I think it was to elect a new pope.
Yeah, and, just minor details.
Yeah, just a minor thing. One of those little tasks that cardinals have to do every now and then. And so he came back and at a dinner with us and told about his experience in Rome. Now, and I've heard other people tell a similar story about his ability to do this. He had no notes. He didn't even have jottings that I'm aware of. He just sat there and talked in a perfectly coherent, organized way, fascinating details about the conclave, probably for about an hour. No ums, no ahs, no hesitation. And I've seen him do this in many, many settings. He had an incredible mind. Anyone who knew him at all understood that. And that was one reason he was so formidable within the church, in my opinion, why he was so widely respected. You didn't idly or you didn't casually trifle with Cardinal George. And he was a wonderful, he was never mean-spirited or unkind in any way, but he would not allow you to plow through some issue that he believed differently about and let you get away with it. He would gently but firmly come back and push.
He'd let
back.
You talk.
He'd let
and
you
then,
talk.
Then he'd
absolutely.
Undress you.
Well, he was just amazing. But the remarkable thing about it was his mind. I mean, and his ability to speak that way. And again, I think you even have something in your video about that ability, but
Papraki.
Yeah, exactly.
But, on the parapet at the seminary, he's talking about how he wrote on the outside of the program just some notes, and everyone wanted his speech.
They wanted
like,
the
well, I don't have it.
Right.
He just wrote it on the outside of the program. There were no notes because he's head down.
This presentation about the conclave, I don't think he even had that because he just it was just remarkable. And as I said, I've seen him do that. If you've seen him give a homily, I don't think he comes to the pulpit with notes, even if it's a rather long-winded, and not long-winded, but long and complicated thought process. So he just had an amazing mind. I was very sorry he was taken from us somewhat prematurely. I had the impression that he was very intent on writing the books that he was in the process of writing. And I had actually, I can't remember, I think he wrote two towards the end, two different books.
Well, he wrote the three books, and the one he was literally writing, died right, okay, right after he wrote it. The Lord let him finish. But that, you know, those books are all available to people now.
Yeah, yep.
We have to take yet another break here. I am guest host Mike Stark, sitting in on the Winds of Change, which is listener supported on AM 750 WNDZ Chicago.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Once again, we're back. This is Mike Stark, and I forgot to put the buttons, but Armand was here to push them for me, or you would have heard nothing. Dead air, son. I'm new at this, so bear with me. I am, of course, here at the listener-supported Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ Chicago, and talking to Kevin White from the Catholic Citizens of Illinois, and also a well-respected lawyer. And something we touched on earlier about some of the changes that are taking place in our Supreme Court and the laws of the land. We talked briefly about the Obamacare mandate and what was going on there. And some people nowadays think that it's all okay because we've got Trump in charge and he's repealed the ripoff of everybody to pay for insurance that they don't have. And you tell me that it's not so. It's not so perfect just yet, is it, Kevin?
No, it's not. And it's become sort of a real obsession of mine to kind of get the word out to people about this. The Trump administration has spent most of the time in office undoing many, many things that Obama did with the stroke of a pen, or through the administrative agencies. People do not appreciate, they're learning, but they do not appreciate as much as they need to what these administrative agencies can do without talking to the Congress. So what's of great interest to me is to get the word out that, no, the threat to our religious liberties, our free exercise rights, is not over. The left has simply moved into the courts in jurisdictions that they know are very likely favorable to them, and judges who they are very likely going to succeed in front of. And they're getting injunctions against enforcement of the regulations, peeling back the regulations. So it becomes kind of an absurd situation. And then many of them are also, this is another big controversy in this area of law, many of them are issuing so-called national injunctions, which in the past have almost never been utilized, except in very rare cases. And now some obscure district court judge from a relatively...
In Hawaii?
Yeah, in Hawaii, for example, that's right, is issuing a nationwide injunction. And I strongly suspect the Supreme Court's going to start slapping some of those down, but in the meantime, they've thrown wrenches into many of the efforts of the Trump administration to reverse the abuses of the Obama administration. And the irony is, and this is a cynicism of our opponents, the irony is that Trump, if you actually look at the regs and if you look at the explanation for why they're repealing what came before, their explanation is that what came before was not properly done, it wasn't backed up with the appropriate research and so on and so forth. And then these judges are saying, well, but yours aren't backed up with the appropriate research. So it becomes, I call it the ratchet effect. The Democrats, I'm sorry, the other side, the other side goes as far as they can.
I think there's a movie called The Other People.
The other side,
but it's about Democrats.
The other side goes back as far as they can, and then as soon as there's any pushback, they try to just hold the line. So it's like a ratchet that only goes one, allows a something to turn in only one direction. So when they can't control the administrative state to the extent that they could before, they go back to the courts and start getting injunctions against the administrative state. And then they scream bloody murder when anybody tries to undo what they had already done in the administrative state. So this battle, I don't think, will ever really completely be won, and ultimately it will only be won by changing hearts and minds. But to the extent our opponents are trying to prevent us from even doing that, trying to change hearts and minds in a democratic way, it's a huge threat. It's a huge threat to everything we understand about how the government's supposed to work.
It's interesting that they're charging Trump with being a Nazi or we're being a militaristic state, and he's trying to force these issues, and he's a violent person, and he's insinuating violence. When most of that is coming from the other direction. I mean,
right.
They keep going back to Charlotte, where one loony person ran somebody over in a car, but that's really the only example that they have of this, and it hurts me, Kevin, to see this, because I am from Illinois. I was born here. And, you know, there's a priest I know. I won't say his name, but he's a Chicago priest. And when he meets people, he says he's from a suburb of Milwaukee because he's embarrassed. And he always says prayer that, please pray for our state that's in such sorrowful condition in our city, our poor city of Chicago. He's a wonderful old priest. And he says this. He's got this way about him, you know, that you kind of laugh, but then you drive away in your car and you're like, boy, what he said is true. Our state is a joke to some of these people.
Yeah.
I mean, our government with Madigan being in charge since 1972, basically calling all the shots, we really don't have, and I'm not saying Rauner's the best governor in the world, but quite honestly, we've got a lot of problems here in our own state. And it's almost like a grocery store, if you will. The good stuff's around the outside, and the mill's all the processed stuff in the cans, and I'm saying it a lot here, but you know, again, no gray area with me. Sorry, folks. But the Republican, my vote doesn't really matter if I want to vote a conservative vote, and I know that because we're outnumbered in the state. But if you take the people, the flyover country, the people that elected Trump in these other states that don't have a metropolis of liberals. Run by a machine, as Chicago has been for so long. What can the Catholic citizens of Illinois do to address this issue?
Well, I'm glad you came back to that point because I really think change has to happen at the level of the individual. And as Catholics, we need to arm ourselves with information. We need to arm ourselves with logical, smart arguments based on our history as Americans and on our Catholic faith. And if we have a chance to talk to people, we will prevail. I have no doubt at all about it. And I think that's why our opponents are so anxious to literally shut us down, because they know that our arguments are the winning arguments. Our arguments, to the extent they're Catholic, are based on our natural human nature, the laws of God written on our hearts and so forth. And there's simply no way that they can prevail against that. But if they shut us down and the public never hears any of that stuff, and people like Governor Rauner consider Catholics disposable as far as their principles are concerned.
Yeah, he went against his own promise.
He went against. He thought nothing of double crossing the cardinal. I mean, that tells you something about how much he is worried about the Catholic vote, and that's our job. I mean, that's the task before us. He needs to be afraid of the Catholic vote. All our politicians need to be afraid of the Orthodox Catholic vote. But you're not going to do that with a website, necessarily. I mean, all these things that we're doing are helpful, but you just have to reach out one-on-one and change hearts and minds. It's really the only way to do it.
If you take the number of Catholics that there are in the United States of America, basically, and they all voted, Father Frank Pavone, priest for life, made a comment a couple years ago, and he said, you know, when they ask you how to vote, how should I vote, Father? He said, you have to take the time to read, if you don't already know, take the time to read the platforms of each opposing party.
Right.
And then pray on it and go in with your Catholic conscience and vote.
Right.
Your Catholic conscience. The failure to do so is the sin of omission. Mm. And you have to go to confession. But the point is, there are so many Catholics right now here in this state that are, you know, I could never vote for the misogynist Trump. He's, you know, blah, 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 blah. Needless to say, when you get into an argument with somebody about pro-life, say, well, you're worried about the immigrants and how you're treating. What about these babies that are in the womb that we're not considering life for them? Who is it for us to judge?
Right. But again, I think, you know, you have to have these conversations one-on-one and without animosity, and we live in a very difficult time for people who are looking for something spiritual as opposed to material in the way of comfort and relief and so forth. On the other hand, in my experience, ultimately that's what we're all looking for, is something spiritual, something more meaningful than just making a buck and having the newest car on the block or whatever. And I think we're seeing a tremendous hunger for that, but it takes a sensitive form of outreach, and it takes people engaging one-on-one and being well-informed, particularly on things about the church, being well-informed on doctrine, being able to explain why the church has a position on something, in some cases explaining what Pope Francis really meant or what someone local really meant when they said what they said. So it takes a lot of time. It's a lot of effort, and I think Catholic Citizens is a great place to participate in that.
One last time before we go, give me your website.
CatholicCitizens.org. That's CatholicCitizens.org.
We'll see you on Friday.
Very good. Thanks for having me.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Mike Stark on the Winds of Change, WNDZ Chicago, 750 AM. See you next Monday, or you'll hear me next Monday, if you want.
To say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell of strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. words that you say when right from wrong has become so obscure. It does not take that long. Can you see?